Despite the rain, Haggard had managed to follow the tracks to Gerson's small frame house. The saddle gun lay across his lap. Warm, dry winds out of the north and west had almost obliterated the tracks now, but enough trace was left for Haggard to follow. He saw a man sitting beneath a brush arbor, shading himself from the morning sun.
Gerson's my name. You're the law, ain't you?
I'm Milam Haggard.
Haggard? I heard of you. I'll bet you're hunting them two cowboys that came through here the other day. I didn't help them none. Didn't even give them nothing to eat. And I know the law was after them. I knowed it the minute they came riding up here.
How many days ago?
Five it was. Maybe six. They bad ones.
They've got a wagon with them and a woman, haven't they?
Well, they do. I know there's something the matter the minute they came inside.
How about the woman?
They had some kind of story about how her pa had died back on the trail and how they brought her along to protect her. If you ask me, they killed him. And then they got that girl with them against her will. Now, I tried to take her away from them, but they beat me up. Took both of them to do it, but they beat me up.
How come you didn't go to the law?
Well, I figured the law would be coming here soon enough.
5-6 days. It's a lot to make up.
You can do it. That wagon is slow. One of the cowboys is sick. And one other thing before you go. When they left here, they took my rifle.
Haggard had no doubt about it now. They meant business. A woman with them, probably against her will, and a rifle. It all meant just one thing. When he found them, he would have to shoot fast and shoot straight. They'd spent almost a week at the Whitaker Ranch, and now Speck seemed strong enough to try a hard ride. In the rosy glow that came before the sunrise, Johnny Fristo tightened his cinch and looked across his horse at Speck, swinging a saddle up onto the long-legged bay which Baker Fristo had given him.
Speck, you real sure you can make it now?
To get away from Milam Haggard, I could ride to Timbuktu.
You still look a little peaked to me.
I'd rather be sick than dead.
Time we get over to the house. They ought to have breakfast ready. Then we'll pull out.
Let's eat and get started. I can almost smell Haggard's breath on the back of my neck. Why he's not already here, I'll never know.
Whitaker came up to them.
Well, boys, this'll be your last woman-cooked meal for a while. Let's go get it.
Sarah Whitaker and Tessie had breakfast on the table and waiting for them. Eggs, steak, gravy, biscuits, and coffee. Sarah Whitaker smiled just as Dugan had, and it was easy to see she had to work at it.
Eat a plenty now. There's a lot of hungry country to the west of here.
Johnny glanced at Tessie. As his gaze touched her, she turned half around, hiding her face from him. Dugan Whitaker set his bucket of milk on the cabinet for straining.
Now, I don't want to seem like I'm pushing you fellas, but it's getting daylight outside. I think for your sakes, you better eat and get a move on.
Tessie and me, we've made an agreement, Johnny. She's not going to San Angelo.
Johnny looked up sharply.
They've asked me to stay here with them, Johnny.
That's right. She's got no place particular to go anyway. All she could earn in San Angelo would be a living. She'll get that here. She's been a world of help and company to us, like our daughter used to be.
That way, Johnny, you'll know where I am.
That's fine, Tessie.
Johnny finished eating before Speck did.
Speck, I'll go bring up the horses while you finish.
He walked out to the barn, taking his time, looking around him slowly. He wanted to remember this place. He took several minutes before he led the horses out the gates and closed it behind him. He swung up on Traveler, leading Speck's bay. A movement at the house caught his eye. He jerked his head around and saw Tessie running toward him, skirts flaring.
Hurry, Johnny, hurry!
She pointed, and he saw the horseman outlined atop the hill, the sun rising like a golden ball of fire behind him. Johnny didn't need binoculars. One glance, and he somehow knew with a dreadful certainty this was Milam Haggard. The horses, fresh and rested, spooked backward as the girl rushed toward them.
Run! Johnny, run! You've still got time! Run!
I'll get Speck.
He moved into a long trot, leading the bay toward the house.
Speck, come a run in!
But Speck didn't come. Johnny reined up at the house. Sarah Whitaker pushed the screen door open with the chair and wheeled out onto the porch.
Johnny, he's taken the rifle and gone out the back.
The rifle?
Dropping the bay's reins, he pulled his horse about and spurred around the house.
Speck! Speck, come back here!
He glanced again toward Haggard. The ex-ranger was quartering across toward the ranch headquarters, his dun horse in a steady trot. A pack horse followed. Speck was hunkered down behind a cedar. Johnny saw that in a few moments, Haggard would ride in front of him. It occurred to Johnny then that Haggard had not seen Speck.
Speck, hold up! Don't do it! Speck, for God's sake, put it down!
Haggard saw Johnny moving toward him, and Johnny saw the man's hands come up holding a saddle gun.
Johnny!
Speck brought up his rifle and leveled it across the branch of the cedar.
No!
Haggard rocked back, dropped the saddle gun, slumped forward, and spilled out of the saddle. Speck straightened and began running toward Haggard, levering another cartridge into the breech. Johnny saw Haggard try vainly to push up onto his hands and knees. Haggard still lived, and Speck was going to shoot him again. Johnny spurred savagely. Speck hadn't listened to him before, and he wouldn't listen now. Speck heard the horse running. He stopped and looked behind him, his eyes wide and desperate. Seeing Johnny meant to stop him, he turned and began running, trying to reach Haggard and finish him before Johnny could ride him down. Speck stopped and raised the rifle to his shoulder. As he brought it level with Haggard's bent body, Johnny reached him. He leaned down from the saddle and grabbed at Speck as he rode by. He succeeded only in knocking him down. The bullet plowed harmlessly into the ground. In desperation, Speck scrambled on hands and knees, trying to reach the rifle. Johnny quit the saddle and came running. He got the rifle just as Speck's fingers closed on the stock of it. He kicked, and the rifle went flying.
Let me kill him, Johnny! Let me kill him!
Speck, snap at it!
Oh, we gotta kill him, Johnny!
Speck threw himself at Johnny, punching savagely. There was no time now for regrets. Johnny put them aside soberly and fought as if he'd never seen Speck before, as if this weren't the best friend he had in the world. He tried to avoid Speck's face with his fists. He punched Speck in the belly and the ribs with all the power he had.
Kill him, Johnny! You gotta kill him!
Speck, haven't we done enough to him already?
It's him or us!
Then it'll have to be us!
Johnny turned away and reached down for the rifle. He opened the bolt, then smashed the weapon against the trunk of a cedar. He walked to Haggard, dreading to look at the man. Haggard was on his knees, hunched over in pain. He wore a pistol, but he made no move to draw it. He seemed paralyzed. Johnny drew the pistol from its holster and pitched it off into the brush.
Let me see, Mr. Haggard. How bad did he hit you?
If Haggard heard, he gave no sign of it. His face was flour white, his thin lips drawn tight against his teeth in a grinding agony. His right hand was gripped against his left shoulder, and blood dribbled between his clawed fingers.
I'm sorry, Mr. Haggard. I swear to God I'm sorry.
Dugan Whitaker came, half running, half hopping. Tessie came too, though she halted behind Haggard as if afraid to look at him. Johnny raised his eyes.
Mr. Whitaker, we gotta get him to the house. Speck, you done it. Now you come help.
They carried Haggard as far as the porch.
Tessie, you run in and fetch a blanket out here. That slug's still in him, and I gotta have daylight to find it.
They laid Haggard out and tore the shirt off of him. They brought whiskey to give him for the pain, but he passed into unconsciousness without needing it. Dugan Whitaker tried probing for the bullet, but his hands wouldn't hold still.
Johnny, it's up to you. You can save him or you can stand back and watch him die. But remember, if you save him, you know one day he'll still come looking for you.
Give me the probe.
Johnny got the bullet out. They washed the wound with whiskey, then Sarah Whitaker used handfuls of flour to stop the bleeding. When they could, they carried him into the lean-to. They placed him on the same bed where Speck had lain.
Mrs. Whitaker, you got another one to tend. We don't bring you nothing but trouble.
The Lord's wish, not yours.
Johnny watched Speck closely, wondering if he might try again. But the spirit was gone from Speck now. He had made his try and failed. He stood with his shoulders drooped, eyes dulled by hopelessness.
Well, at least you got time now. It'll be a long while before he goes after you again.
Consciousness slowly returned to Haggard. He blinked, trying to focus his eyes. Johnny stood beside his bed.
It's me, Mr. Haggard. Me, Johnny Fristo. I just want you to know I'm sorry for what happened.
Haggard forced himself to hold his eyes a moment on Johnny, and Johnny saw the same implacability he had seen that day on the Sonora Road.
I won't be here long. One day soon I'll be looking for you again, and I vow, boy, I'll find you.
Johnny turned away sadly, his head down. Why try to tell him again it had been Larimore who had killed his wife? Haggard hadn't believed him before. He would believe him even less now. Johnny dug into his pocket for the money Baker Fristo had given him.
He'll be needing a doctor, Mr. Whitaker. You get him one and pay him with this.
You need that money for yourself.
If it hadn't been for us, he wouldn't be here. Take it, please.
Johnny stopped and picked up a sack of food which Tessie and Mrs. Whitaker had prepared.
Come on, Speck, let's go.
Outside, he tied the sack onto his own saddle, not trusting Speck to do it this time. He said goodbye first to Sarah, then to Dugan Whitaker. Last, he took Tessie's hands.
Tessie, it's been awful good to know you. Take care of yourself.
Johnny?
She leaned forward and kissed him on the lips, then pulled her hands free and turned her back, her head bowed. Johnny rode away, looking over his shoulder. Speck followed him like a whipped dog. Johnny kept looking back, seeing the Whitakers watching him, seeing that Tessie had turned once more and was watching him too. Suddenly, Johnny stopped his horse.
Speck, wait here. I'll be back.
He turned around and spurred into a long trot. He stepped to the ground in front of Tessie. He grabbed her into his arms with such a violence that his hat fell off and hit the ground at his feet.
Tessie, I don't want to leave you.
And I don't want you to leave. But what can we do?
I'll send for you, that's what. Someday, somewhere, I'll come onto a place that's so far out of the way, Haggard will never be able to find it. When I do, when I get settled, I'll write to you, Tessie. I'll send for you.
Promise, Johnny?
I promise. Now that I've known you, Tessie, I couldn't live without you anymore.
I'll wait, Johnny. And I'll be ready. I'll follow you if you go 10,000 miles.
They quartered west by southwest, skirting the upper reaches of the Centralia Draw and pointing in a general way toward ancient Horsehead Crossing. They rode dry all day through greasewood and stunted mesquite and patches of prickly pear. Not even a windmill showed on the skyline. They were west now of any living waters which would feed into the Middle Concho. This was the desolate stretch of lizard and rattlesnake and chaparral hawk country which had brought misery and desperation to untold numbers of travelers making their way toward the unfriendly river known as the Pecos. Before night, they reached the China Pond. In front of them, and all to the south, stretched a long line of flat blue mountains. Their profile was low, but Johnny knew they were rough, impassable for wagons and difficult for horsemen. All trails led across the desert toward a scalloped opening near the northern edge. This would be Castle Gap, known for centuries as a pointer to Horsehead just beyond.
It's a good place to stop, Speck. We got water here.
They made camp at the China Pond. Automatically, Speck rode off to try to gather up some firewood. He came back without any, and Johnny used dried cow chips for fuel to cook a little supper. Later, Speck sat back from the tiny fire and ate listlessly, keeping his own counsel. Johnny watched him, wondering what dark thoughts plodded through Speck's troubled mind.
Speck, you still mad at me because of this morning? I had to do it. We're not killers.
You fought me. You used to call yourself my friend, and you fought me.
I'm still your friend.
No, you ain't. You think you're better than I am. I felt it coming on ever since we stopped in Angelo. Aunt Prue told you about me and my mother. Now I'm not good enough for you anymore. I'm trash.
Speck, that's the silliest notion I ever heard of.
No, it isn't. There was a time you wouldn't have fought me for nothing in this world.
Now you'd like to take that girl and ride off and leave me. But you can't because you know we're in this together. You're stuck with me and you hate it. You hate me.
You're all mixed up, Speck. I like you the same as I always did. Is any consolation to you? What your Aunt Prue said didn't make any difference at all. I've known about your mother for years.
You mean you always knew and you never let on? That makes it even worse! All these years you've been acting like my friend, and all the time you was probably snickering at me behind my back.
He stood up and stomped off to where he had pitched his blanket to the ground. He spread it out and flopped down on his back, lying there and staring angrily up at the darkening sky. Johnny's jaw took on a hard set. No use arguing. Speck had a haywire way of thinking sometimes. He'd come around by and by. At least Johnny hoped he would. Next morning, they went on to the gap. Johnny pointed across the gently rolling stretch of greasewood which lay below.
Down yonder, Speck, is Horsehead Crossing. Been a lot of history made along here.
Maybe you can see the history, but all I can see is a lizard lick of a country that ain't worth a Mexican dollar if you got back 90 cents change.
They followed the bone-strewn trail 12 miles and came at last to the river. Here was fabled Horsehead, with its sloping banks, which led down to swift-moving water. Johnny saw a trail that angled off upriver.
Saw to lead the way up to the Salt Lake, Speck. That's where Dugan Whitaker told us to go.
Let's get riding, then.
They followed the wagon trail northwestward, roughly paralleling the Snaking River and its line of salt cedar trees. As they approached the Juan Cordona Salt Lake, the hard alkali soil began giving way gradually to more of sand. Heat waves shimmered on the horizon as the salt basin came into view. The lake was a vast, irregular stretch of shining salt, lying in an ancient basin rimmed by sand hills. The level bottom glistened in the sun, though along the edges a thin skim of dust had settled and turned it brown. There was feed here for livestock, a scattering of sand-type bunch grasses and weeds. There was the tough green bear grass with its rapier-like stems and the tall yucca stalks. And here and there about the lake lay a dotting of camps, salt haulers of all types. Johnny and Speck rode into two burro camps without finding anyone who spoke English. The third camp they found had a half a dozen heavy wagons already full of salt and several more wagons in the process of being loaded by Mexican help. A crew sweated in the sun, their shovels slowly pitching dry salt into the wagons. The dark-skinned man saw the cowboys and came walking toward them.
Howdy.
Y'all looking for somebody in particular?
We're supposed to find a feller named Massengill.
Y'all ain't lawmen or something? Ain't got a warrant for somebody?
No, sir. We just got a letter from Mr. Massengill, is all. Friend of his sent it. Man named Dugan Whitaker.
Well, that's different. My name happens to be Massengill. Folks call me Jip on account of the Pecos River water I tote in my barrels. Afraid at first you might be star packers. I'm already short-handed, and I sure didn't want you taking off none of my help. You say you got a letter?
Johnny handed him a letter which Dugan Whitaker had spent an hour in writing by lamplight the night before Johnny and Speck had left the ranch.
We're in kind of a jackpot, Mr. Massengill. Dugan Whitaker, he thought you might be able to help us.
Massengill squatted in the shade of a wagon. It took him almost as long to read the letter as it had taken Whitaker to write it. His index finger followed the lines as he slowly read, his lips forming the words. At last he looked up.
A jackpot, you say? Huh, looks to me like it's right smart worse than that. I've seen Milam Haggard. How far behind you is he?
Johnny explained about the shooting at the Whitaker Ranch. Massengill frowned suspiciously.
Y'all must have known old Dugan a long time.
Never met him before.
You sure must have convinced him you was all right. Or maybe you held a gun at his head to make him write this letter.
No, sir. He wrote it of his own accord. He was awful good to us, him and Mrs. Whitaker both. It's the first time we ever been in trouble. They knew it.
Well, if you convinced old Dugan, I guess that'll do for me. He's not an easy man fooled. And if Haggard has been laid up with a bullet in him, that means you got some time. We don't have to do things in a hurry. I'll make you a swap. You help me, I'll help you.
Anything you want.
Well, the way I see it, Haggard will be looking for y'all to go on west. That's where any smart man on the Dodge would go. So we'll fool him. Soon as I get these wagons full, I'm taking this salt south, down the Pecos River. There's ranches off down in there that a man wouldn't find in 100 years if he didn't know where to look. It's a big country. Some of it so big and dry that a hawk won't leave the nest without it carries a canteen. I'll take you down there with me, and I'll get you a job on some outfit where the whole United States Army couldn't find you.
That's mighty good of you, Mr. Massengill.
Jip, and don't thank me till you find out how good your hands fit a shovel handle. I'll swap you a ride on my wagons in return for your muscles and your sweat. Sooner we get them wagons loaded with salt, the sooner we start down the river. You'll find the shovels over yonder.
After spending a few days at the Whitaker Ranch, Haggard had gone back to town. He had been there now for the past 3 months, waiting to again pick up the trail of the two cowboys. He had never been a drinking man. He didn't believe it wise in his trade. Often he had observed how liquor had made quarry fall easy prey to a gun in the hands of a sober man. But Haggard was a lonelier man than most people suspected, and once in a while he welcomed a visit from old friends. On such occasions, though he didn't drink, he sometimes accompanied his friends to the saloon and sat there to enjoy their companionship. Thus it was that he happened to walk into a place one afternoon and find himself face to face with the cattle trader Larimore. Larimore was playing cards with two prospective cow buyers. The surprise was mutual. Larimore's eyes opened wide and frightened, his face losing color. In Sonora that day, after Cora Haggard's death, Larimore had sensed how close he came to being shot when the sheriff told Milam Haggard about the swindle against the two cowboys. Though Haggard blamed the shooting directly on Johnny Fristo and Spec Quitman, he had immediately grasped the fact that Larimore's duplicity had provoked the incident. Haggard's granite fist had sent Larimore reeling. Larimore had lain terrified, not moving, knowing that if Haggard had been wearing a gun, he would have killed him without ceremony and without regret. Seeing Haggard now, Larimore arose shakily.
Haggard, I've been trying to stay out of your way just like you told me. I had no idea you was here.
His glance dropped anxiously to the six-shooter on Haggard's right hip. Haggard only stared at him, his eyes hard and hating. Larimore watched Haggard's right hand.
Haggard, I ain't got a gun on me.
Larimore, those cowboys still claim you were the one who really fired the shot. I know you said you didn't, but I want to hear you say it again.
It was them. They both had guns.
That's a lie. Only one of them had a gun. And you had one.
It was them that killed her. It was them.
Haggard cut his gaze to the two men who'd been playing cards at the table with Larimore. One he recognized as a rancher south of here. He took the other for a rancher, too. They sat watching in surprise, not quite comprehending.
Y'all have business with this man?
Well, he told us he knew where there was some cattle we could buy worth the money.
You'd better have nothing to do with him. He's a thief, a liar, and a cheat.
Haggard, you got no right...
Leave town, Larimore. Leave this part of the country. Next time I see you, I'll probably kill you.
Larimore stared after him, frozen.
Haggard, watch out!
Instinctively, he jumped to one side, whirling as his right hand dropped and came up with a six-shooter. Larimore crouched awkwardly, having reached down to his boot top for a small .38. His shot went wild. He never got a chance to fire again. Haggard cautiously moved toward him, kicking the .38 out of the way.
How about it, Larimore? Was it you who killed her?
Larimore went limp. He died with his eyes and his mouth open.
It doesn't matter, I guess. They all killed her.
It was a rare occasion when Dugan Whitaker came to town. But this morning, sitting in front of a shack and watching the dark clouds which built threateningly in the north, Haggard saw the Whitakers pass by in their buckboard. Dugan and Sarah Whitaker gave him a polite nod, but nothing more. The Barnett girl only stared, and Haggard thought he saw fear leap into her face. During the time he had been at the ranch, wounded, the girl had kept her distance as if he had been a rattlesnake. Watching the Whitaker's buckboard wheel on down toward the heart of the settlement, Haggard suddenly remembered this was the day for the mail hack. And it was due about now, give or take an hour. He didn't want the Whitakers receiving their mail before he got there. Squaring his hat, he started up the dusty road afoot. To his satisfaction, he found the Whitaker buckboard sitting in front of a different store. Dugan Whitaker and Tessie Barnett were lifting Sarah Whitaker down into her wheelchair. Haggard looked east on the wagon road that led from San Angelo. He saw dust. He wondered if that would be the mail hack. This was going to be cutting things pretty fine. He sat down on an empty bench at the front of the store to wait. His gaze drifted up and down the street, cutting back often to the Whitaker buckboard. He hoped they wouldn't come over this way before the hack got in. The driver pulled up, the dust drifting on ahead of him. He nodded at Haggard and carried the mailbag inside. Haggard kept his seat a while, giving the storekeeper time to put up the mail. There wasn't any hurry about it, so long as the Whitakers didn't come. Even so, it seemed it took an awfully long time. Finally, the hack driver came out and nodded again, wiping his mouth. The storekeeper always had coffee ready for him. He took time to drink it before he traveled on. Haggard glanced through the window constantly to see if the mail had been sorted. The seat of his pants prickled with impatience. When he saw the storekeeper leave the mail corner, he arose and walked inside. The storekeeper's eyes met his, and Haggard knew even before the man nodded.
It came, Mr. Haggard.
You're sure?
It's addressed to Miss Tessie Barnett, care of Dugan Whitaker.
Let me have it, John.
Well, now, I can't be doing that. It's against the law.
Damn the law. Give me that letter.
I promised I'd tell you when it came. I didn't tell you I'd give it to you. It's still the U.S. mail, Mr. Haggard. Till the girl puts her hands on it, there ain't nobody can touch it. Not you and not me.
Anger swelled in Haggard. He was sorely tempted to walk across and take the letter anyway. But judgment stopped him. Unreasoning anger was another luxury he had never allowed himself.
All right. I'll wait.
He walked to the door and started to go outside. But he saw Tessie Barnett on her way, walking rapidly several steps in front of old Dugan Whitaker. Haggard stepped back, looking quickly around him. He saw an open door leading into a storeroom.
Not a word, John.
He stepped through the door and out of sight. Tessie came in, Dugan Whitaker hurrying along in a vain effort to catch up with her.
Oh, Tessie, go easy. Have some pity on an old man.
Tessie might as well not have heard him. Eyes sparkling in anticipation, she searched out the storekeeper.
Do you have any mail for me, Tessie Barnett?
Yes, ma'am, I believe I do.
He walked over to the corner and sought out a letter from among a dozen. Regretfully, he placed it in her eager hands.
This what you've been waiting for?
Uncle Dugan, it's from him. I know it is.
Haggard stepped out of the storeroom unnoticed by Tessie and Whitaker. The storekeeper turned his back and walked away, wanting no part of this. Tessie ripped the envelope open, her hands trembling.
Uncle Dugan, it is from him. It is.
Milam Haggard stepped up beside her and snatched the letter from her hands.
I'll take that.
You!
Haggard, you got no right.
Haggard stepped back and turned half around, keeping the letter out of his reach.
I have got the right.
He skipped the opening lines, for they spoke of loneliness, and he knew all there was to know about that. His gaze stopped farther down in the letter.
This is a good ranch. Little on the plain side, but you're gonna like it here, Tessie. There's a good adobe house the owner says we can live in. Kind of little, but big enough for two. Think we can slip down to Langtree and get Judge Bean to marry us without anybody paying us much notice. You would never find a place by yourself, so we'll meet you at the Horsehead Crossing on the Pecos. Maybe Mr. Whitaker can bring you or get somebody to. I'll be there about September 15th. Bring your wagon. I'll wait till you come and please hurry.
Horsehead Crossing. Haggard crunched the letter in his hand. September the 15th. Why, that was yesterday. This letter must have traveled halfway around the world before it reached here. So, Fristo was already there, waiting, and Quitman with him, if Haggard was any judge. He knew a quiet moment of triumph, and then his face turned grave. A chill passed down his back as he turned to see Tessie Barnett and saw the dismay in her eyes. It struck him that she was a pretty girl. Silently, he handed her the letter.
Mr. Haggard, you can't do it. Please, say you're not going to do it.
I'm sorry it's this way, Mr. Whitaker. I think you best take her home.
He turned his back and walked to the door.
No!
Haggard hurried his step a little, wanting to get away from her. He went down off the porch and into the dusty street, his eyes set on the barn where his dun horse was kept stabled. Clouds were darkening overhead.
Mr. Haggard, wait. Please, Mr. Haggard, listen to me. What good will it do to kill him? Will she come back? Will another wrong make things right? I love him, Mr. Haggard. If you loved her, you should understand that.
I don't.
Why, Mr. Haggard? Tell me why.
You know why. He helped to kill my wife.
He didn't shoot her. Larimore did.
All you know is what he told you.
I know him. And I know he told the truth.
Whoever actually fired the shot, they were all responsible. They all killed her. They'll all pay.
He had mercy on you. Won't you have mercy on him?
He had mercy on me.
Speck Whitman tried to kill you. Johnny stopped him. He knew you meant to kill him, but he wouldn't let Speck kill you. He even took the bullet out of you. And he left every cent he had with the Whitakers to pay a doctor to take care of you.
I didn't accept it. I paid my own way.
But he tried. That's important, isn't it? He tried.
Would his money bring my wife back to life? She's dead. Nothing he has done since will change that.
Will his dying change it?
Miss, I'm sorry for you, but there's nothing I can do. There's a blood debt to settle. I'm gonna see that it's paid.
You know what you are, Haggard. You're a killer. You're a lawman because that makes it legal for you, but if you couldn't be a lawman, you'd be an outlaw. You won't listen to reason because you have no reason. You're like an animal. It's your nature to kill. It's a disease with you. You pretend you're doing this out of love for your wife, but you're lying to us. And you may even be lying to yourself. You've hunted men so long it's turned you into some kind of a wolf. Maybe it's better for her that she is dead. She couldn't have lived with you very long. In your own way, you'd have killed her yourself.
Anger rushed to his face. He lifted his hand as if to strike her, but he stopped himself.
Go ahead. Hit me. Shoot me, even. If you gotta kill somebody, maybe I'll do.
Abruptly, he turned away from her.
I swear to you, Haggard. If you kill Johnny, I'll see you dead. Then who'll kill me? Where will it ever end?
Haggard walked on, wishing he couldn't hear her, wishing he couldn't feel the stinging lash of her hatred. Tessie stood in the middle of the street with her small fists clenched and watched Haggard walk stolidly toward the barn. Dugan Whitaker came up from behind and put his hand on her shoulder.
You can't reason with him, girl. I'm afraid the only way anybody could stop him now would be to kill him.
Uncle Dugan, maybe you...
could kill him? Tessie, I'd do almost anything for you, but that is one thing I could not do.
I didn't mean that, but we've got to warn Johnny.
Well, it's a long ride to Horsehead. Our buckboard couldn't get there before Haggard and his horse.
But a horseback rider might, if he was desperate enough.
Honey, there was a time, but I'm not that tough anymore. Haggard would outlast me and outrun me.
I'm young. And I'm desperate enough.
You? It's a hard trip for a girl.
I've been here 3 months. I've learned a plenty, and I've toughened a lot. I've got a good reason to make this ride. A better reason than Haggard has.
You won't make it, girl. But you'll regret it all your life if you don't make the try. Come on, I know where I can get your horse. But what if you do make it? Even if you do warn Johnny and he runs, what then? Haggard will keep coming. He won't stop.
Then we'll keep running. Johnny and me. I should have gone with him before. I'll stay with him this time.
Well, that's no lie for running.
It's better than dying. We'll live while we can.
Mean enough, even in normal times, the Pecos River was on an angry rise. Sodden gray clouds loomed heavy to the north and west. A light mist enveloped this desolate greasewood barren, which stretched outward in all directions from Horsehead Crossing. Johnny Fristo stirred a glowing cowchip fire and put on a smoke-blackened can to boil a mixture of ground coffee and brackish Pecos River water. He reached under a tarp for a couple of dry chips out of a pile, which he and Speck had gathered yesterday before the rain started. Chips were about the only fuel here fit to use. Prairie coal, some called them. Speck Quitman rolled his blankets and frowned up at the low-hanging clouds.
Johnny, ain't that girl ever gonna get here? This is the spookiest place I was ever at.
They had been here 3 days. Johnny was getting tired of it, too.
I told you 20 times, Speck. The letter may have got held up. Not much telling when that Mexican got to the post office to mail it.
Speck had changed during the 3 months or so they had worked on that ranch way down south along the Pecos. He didn't eat much, and he didn't sleep. He smoked up all the tobacco he could get his hands on, and those hands were unsteady. Always, when the work would lag a moment, Speck's gaze would lift to the horizon, and fear clouded his eyes. He'd run out of talk a long time ago. Speck looked into the steaming can and found to his disappointment that the coffee wasn't ready.
Johnny, I see somebody coming.
Speck, there isn't anybody coming. Will you ever quit seeing things?
I'd have swore. He's coming, though, Johnny. Milam Haggard is coming. I can feel it in my bones.
Speck, you felt Milam Haggard in your bones ever since that morning on the Sonora Road. There hasn't been a day you haven't looked for him to come.
There hasn't been an hour.
Speck poured coffee into a tin cup.
Johnny, what if Haggard does come? We ain't even got a gun.
He lost us, Speck. He's got no idea where we're at. Besides, what would we do with a gun if we had it? We're not gonna shoot him, not again.
I would. If he was to die, we could live. As long as he lives, he's hanging over our heads like them clouds up there. I'd have killed him that other time if you'd have let me alone.
And then what, Speck? He was right, we were wrong. Instead of him coming after us alone, they'd have been 100 or 2 of them. And we'd have been dead now instead of sitting here at Horsehead.
Might be better dead than to live the way we do. Afraid every time we see a stranger. Seeing him all day and her all night.
Speck, I wish I knew what to tell you.
Speck kept watching the horizon. At length, he pushed to his feet excitedly, dropping his cup and splashing coffee onto the wet ground.
Johnny, it is somebody. Look!
Johnny squinted. Speck was right. Yonder came a rider.
It's him. It's gotta be. Let's saddle up and skin out of here.
Be sensible for once, Speck. It won't be Haggard. How could he know?
He just knows, that's all. He ain't human.
He's human enough to get himself shot.
Speck grabbed up his saddle, blanket, and bridle and hurried out to where his horse was picketed. Johnny watched him throw the rig up onto the horse's back.
Speck, even if it was Haggard, where would you go?
I'd head out across that river.
It's too high. You couldn't swim it.
With him after me, I could swim the Mississippi.
Johnny turned to watch the oncoming rider. Something about the horseman struck him oddly.
It's a woman, Speck. She's riding side saddle.
The rider came nearer.
Speck, it's Tessie! It's Tessie!
Oh, it's high time she was getting here. Only where's her wagon?
Johnny trotted out afoot to meet her.
Tessie, we'd all be giving you up. But why'd you come by yourself?
We've got no time to talk. Milam Haggard's on his way.
Haggard?
He got a hold of your letter, Johnny. I've ridden as hard as I could to get ahead of him. I passed him in the gap, and he knows it.
Speck had heard, his face drained.
Johnny, I told you I felt it. He's coming. He's coming, and we're gonna die.
Speck, hush up that kind of talk. We gotta think.
It's too late for that. You do what you want to. Me, I'm hightailing across that river. It's still on the rise. Time he gets here, maybe he won't be able to follow me.
It's already too late, Speck. Water's too high.
With the river, we got a chance. With Haggard, we got none at all.
Speck swung into the saddle and touched spurs to the bay horse.
Speck, if you go plumb crazy, you come back here.
Speck kept riding.
Speck, if you got the sense God gave a jackrabbit, you come back here.
Speck saw that Johnny intended to stop him. He spurred again, putting the horse into a long trot. As Speck looked back, Johnny caught a glimpse of his friend's fear-stricken face.
Speck, for God's sake, stop!
Speck spurred down the wet bank. The bay balked at going into the swirling brown water. Speck kept jabbing at him with his spurs and slapping the horse's rump with his hat. Finally, the bay jumped off into the river. For a moment, it looked as if they were going to be all right. Speck had swum rivers before. Getting out into the fast current, he slipped out of the saddle to give his horse a better chance. He clung to the horn and the saddle strings. But something happened. The horse panicked and he began threshing. Somehow, Speck lost his hold. Johnny watched open-mouthed from the bank.
Tessie! Bring my rope! It's on my saddle!
Tessie jerked the horn string loose and came running with the rope. Meeting her, Johnny grabbed it and ran down to the riverbank.
Speck! Over here! I got a rope!
Speck's arms windmilled wildly. Foamy water swirled around him, carrying him swiftly down the river. Johnny threw the rope. Speck clutched it, and for a moment Johnny thought he had him. But Speck lost his hold. Once more, he disappeared beneath the muddy water. Johnny went running again. This time, he knew Speck wouldn't have the strength left to hold the rope. Johnny ran until he was sure he was ahead of him. He dropped down over the slippery riverbank, pulling the loop tightly around his own waist and quickly half-hitching the other end of the rope to a salt cedar. Catching a glimpse of Speck above him, Johnny plunged into the water. He glimpsed Speck almost upon him. He grabbed an arm.
Speck!
He pulled Speck up against him and began trying to fight the current with one arm. It was a hopeless fight. He felt himself going under, but stubbornly he held on to Speck. With all the strength that was left in him, he fought his way to the bank. Tessie was there, wet from the rain, muddy from climbing down the steep bank. She grabbed Johnny's free arm and helped pull him up. Speck wasn't moving, and Johnny began to hammer on his chest.
Here, Johnny, you're done in. I'll try.
Speck's horse climbed up onto the bank and stood exhausted, hanging his head. Tessie pumped a while till Johnny regained his breath. Then he tried it. He was getting no response. His heartbeat quickened, and desperation began taking hold of him.
Speck, you gotta come out of it. Speck!
But Speck never stirred. Tessie reached for Speck's wrist and felt for a pulse. When she looked up, her face was stricken.
Johnny, there's nothing more we can do.
I tried. Speck, I tried.
He sat on the wet ground, his knees drawn up, his face buried in his arms. Tessie's hand was light and comforting on his shoulder.
Johnny, I see a rider coming. It'll be Haggard.
Johnny slowly raised his head and blinked, clearing his eyes. The mist had almost stopped. He could see the tall rider pausing in camp, studying the tracks. In a moment, the rider saw them. He reined the horse gently around and came on in a walk, following the river. Across his lap, he held a saddle gun.
Johnny, what are we going to do?
Earlier, I had to run. Now, I don't feel like running anymore. I'm tired of running.
Johnny, I've got a gun. Dugan Whittaker gave it to me.
No gun, Tessie. Whatever happens, I don't aim to fight him. We were in the wrong.
But now he's in the wrong. He told us himself. They wouldn't even give him a warrant. The law isn't looking for you. Only Haggard is.
I wish I'd known that before.
But don't you see, Johnny? You've got a right to defend yourself now. He's already killed Larimore. In a way, he killed Speck. Now you've got to kill him before he kills you.
No, Tessie. I won't kill him.
Then run, Johnny. Take Speck's horse and run.
How far could I get? I've run too long already and for nothing. I'm through running. I'm gonna stand and face him. Whatever's gonna happen, let it happen here. Let this be the end of it.
He turned and waited for Haggard. Rifle at the ready, Haggard rode up slowly and drew rein 20 feet from Johnny Fristo and Tessie Barnett. He looked down a moment at Speck Quitman.
Yes, he's dead, Mr. Haggard. You wanted to kill him, and you did.
I killed him.
With fear. The fear you drove him to it. So carve another notch on your gun. The credit belongs to you. Enjoy it.
Now there's only you left, Fristo.
I'm here.
I don't see your gun.
I haven't got a gun. Never did have one.
Haggard's eyes narrowed. He hadn't considered this possibility. He nodded toward the body.
Then your friend had one. Get it. I'll give you that much time.
He doesn't have one either.
Haggard eased down from the saddle, keeping the rifle ready, and pointed toward Fristo.
He had one. He shot me.
I smashed the rifle. He hasn't had one since.
I've never shot an unarmed man.
If you shoot me, that's the way it's gonna have to be.
Mr. Haggard, you killed Larimore. You killed Speck Quitman. Aren't two men enough to pay for what happened to your wife? Especially when it was an accident in the first place. How much more blood is it going to take?
This one is still left. I've never hunted a man in my life that I didn't finally get him.
Is it your wife you're really thinking of, Mr. Haggard? Or is it yourself? Two men dead, and you're fixing to murder another? Wouldn't your wife be proud of you now?
Haggard tried not to listen. He reached across with his left hand and drew the pistol from the holster on his right hip.
Here, Fristo.
He pitched the pistol to Johnny's feet.
Now you've got a gun.
If you want me dead, you have to shoot me like I am. I'll not fight you.
I'll trail you. I'll hound you till one day I catch you with a gun.
You'll never catch me with one. I intend to never touch one as long as I live. Mr. Haggard, I've lived in hell ever since the day your wife died. I've run from you and I've died 1,000 times. Ever since it happened, I've been looking back over my shoulder, expecting to see you come riding over a hill to kill me. And when I haven't seen you, I've seen your wife. Now all of a sudden, I'm more tired of running than I'm scared of dying. You want to kill me? Then you do it right now, right here. If you don't kill me, I'm going home where I belong. And I'm going to tell the world what I've done and learn to live in spite of it. I'm through running, and I'm through being scared. So you shoot me if you want to. But if you're ever going to do it, do it now.
He waited a long moment for Haggard to move. Then he turned his back and started walking slowly towards Speck Quitman's bay horse.
Fristo, stop!
No, Mr. Haggard. If you shoot him now, it'll be murder. I'll tell them all how it was. You won't be the hunter then. They'll be hunting you.
Fristo, for God's sake, turn and face me. Don't make me shoot you in the back.
From the corner of his eye, he saw Tessie Barnett reach into her jacket. What Haggard did then was pure reflex. He swung the rifle toward the girl. In horror, he realized what he was doing, but he was unable to stop the motion he had started. The pistol dropped from the girl's hand. She stared at him in wide-eyed surprise. The color suddenly wiped out of her face. Her left hand lifted toward her shoulder.
Tessie!
Johnny took 2 long strides and grabbed her as she started to sag.
Tessie!
Haggard came out of his shock. He threw the saddle gun away and stepped toward the girl.
My God. Oh, my God. I didn't mean to, girl. I couldn't stop it. I tried to raise the muzzle.
Ashen-faced, Johnny Fristo was easing her to the ground.
I didn't mean to. It was an accident.
It isn't so bad, Mr. Haggard. You did raise that muzzle. You just kind of grazed her.
I thought I'd killed her. How could I have lived with myself?
Maybe you'd have learned. The way I've had to learn.
Reaction nearly got the best of Haggard then. He trembled in realization of what he had almost done. He had almost murdered a man. Had it not been for the girl, he would have shot Johnny Fristo in the back. And then he had almost killed the girl.
Fristo, we'd better do something about that wound of hers. She's going to be sick.
I reckon I can take care of her, Mr. Haggard. If you've finished your business here, maybe you just better go.
Yes, I guess I'm finished.
Haggard glanced at Speck Quitman lying on the muddy ground, and he looked once more at the girl.
I'm finished.
Haggard turned toward his horse. He thought of his pistol lying on the ground where he had tossed it at Fristo's feet. He thought of the smoking saddle gun he had dropped, but he didn't pause to pick them up. He hoped he never had to look at another gun. Swinging into the saddle, he gave 1 quick glance to the violent horsehead crossing, then reined his horse eastward toward the cleft that was Castle Gap. His shoulders were bent, and his head was down. He never looked back.